Good afternoon, Eastern Washington and fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from Spokane Valley, Washington. The front lines, as it were, for the battle for freedom and liberty, brought to you once again by the committee to elect Matt Shea, Republican, and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. About our hope not being in man, but in Jesus Christ. About not ending in prayer, but also moving to action. And about Luke 17, 20 through 21. Now, having been questioned by the Pharisees as to when the kingdom of God was coming, he answered them and said, "Kingdom of God is not coming with signs to be observed, nor will they say, 'Look, here it is,' or 'There it is.' For behold, the kingdom of God is inside you," or in some translations, "in your midst." Today, I want to talk about a subject that doesn't get a lot of attention here, maybe locally, as it should. And I'm going to also talk about maybe some solutions for this. But today I want to talk about persecuted Christians. I want to talk about the fact that persecution is beginning to happen here in the United States of America. And yes, it's in some subtle ways, but as Brother Yun, who's a Chinese underground church leader, said that he believed, and this is a paraphrase, that he believed that the harder forms of persecution were the persecutions that didn't involve physical torture or hurt. But it was the types of persecutions that were more mind games, the more subtle ways, the more the persecution that was more of an ostracization of people. And ostracizing people is a longstanding Marxist tactic. But here in America, according to the undeniable, the survey of hostility toward religion in America 2017. From 2011 to 2016, attacks on religious liberty in this country more than doubled. More than doubled. Now, there are some better known aspects of this, like Baron L. Stutzman and Arlene's Flowers down in the Tri-Cities, which was overtly persecuted for their religious beliefs, Masterpiece Cake Shop, the photographers down in New Mexico, the Chinese flag flying over the Washington State Capitol on Easter weekend a couple of years ago. Those were kind of overt and better known. What's less known, for example, is the post by Antifa Idaho basically advocating for violence against Trump supporters and by implication Christians. The posting of the Socialist Rifle Association Spokane chapter on its Facebook page, a YouTube video of the Soviet national anthem of 1984. Now, I want to say something, and I'm going to stop right there. There are a lot of people in our community whose families and direct relatives survived persecution in the former Soviet Union, came to this country for freedom. A lot of people in our area. People who had friends or family members in the gulag, had friends or family members put into work camps, were part of the church that split with the state church in 1963 and became the confessing church, and had to hide in the woods on Sundays to do worship services, or in houses where they were crammed together to do worship services because the KGB was trying to find them. This is an important thing, I think, for everybody to understand. When the Socialist Rifle Association Spokane chapter posts the Soviet anthem of 1984, that has a profound meaning to folks that survived the former Soviet Union. And it's important, again, to understand what the roots of that persecution of Christians are. And it is very clearly rooted in two things, Marxism and Islamism. And I'm going to start with Marxism first. Marxism, Karl Marx, in his own words, wrote several things that are fairly interesting, okay? He wrote a book of verse, poetry, in 1837. One of those poems was called Invocation of One in Despair, where he says this, that he wishes to avenge himself against the one, capital O, who rules above. In The Pale Maiden, he wrote, quote, "Thus heaven he's forfeited, he knows it full well, his soul once true to God is chosen for hell." He also wrote in another poem, quote, "Embracing me, the world will dumbly pass away. The world will dumbly pass away and then sink down to utter nothingness, perished with no existence. That would be really living." Then you have Saul Alinsky, one of the most famous, anyway, modern Marxists, who dedicated his Rules for Radicals to the Evil One. Then, if you actually dig deeper, you get into where Karl Marx really set the foundation of evil that underpins socialism and Marxism. In Chapter 2 of the Communist Manifesto, and you can look this up, published, February 21st, 1848. You can look this up. Just read the second chapter. It says some very interesting things. Here's a few of them. "In this sense, the theory of communists may be summed up in the single sentence, abolition of private property," end quote. Quote, "Communism abolishes eternal truths, all religion and all morality," end quote. Quote, and this is referring to communism again, "abolishes countries and nationality," end quote. Quote, "abolition of the family," end quote. So what you have is effectively, and I want to go through each one of this, the abolition of private property, that is theft. So it goes against the Ten Commandments, but it also goes against the original commandment of the Lord for man to take dominion over the earth. In other words, to properly steward creation. Goes against that. The abolition of eternal truths, all religion, all morality, is effectively Karl Marx saying that he's trying to abolish Jesus Christ, which obviously is not possible, but that's what he's trying to do by saying that, because Jesus Christ came to this earth, as it says in John, to testify to the truth and to establish or fulfill the law. And to establish that morality going forward of love. Also, when it says abolish countries and nationalities, God made nations intentionally. And you can read about that. Jesus Christ made nations. You can read about that in Acts. Abolition of the family. God established the family, and here they're trying to remove it. But more importantly, and I want to read this. This is from Vladimir Lenin. This was the Marxist hostility toward religion, so people can kind of understand that. And then I want to end with a quote from Brother Yoon. This is what Vladimir Lenin talked about, that it is the absolute duty of social democrats. Now understand, this is the term he's using back then, to make a public statement of their attitude toward religion. Social democracy bases its whole world outlook on scientific socialism, i.e. Marxism. The philosophical basis of Marxism is dialectical materialism, a materialism which is absolutely atheistic and positively hostile to religion. As such, it is as relentlessly hostile to religion. We must combat religion. That is the ABC of all materialism and consequently of Marxism. But Marxism is not a materialism which has stopped at the ABC. Marxism goes further. And this is where this gets creepy, because this justifies genocide in their minds. It says, quote, "We must know how to combat religion. The combating of religion cannot be confined to abstract ideological preaching, and it must not be reduced to such preaching. It must be linked up with the concrete practice of the class movement, which aims," here's the key part, "at eliminating the social roots of religion. That was Vladimir Lenin, May 13th, 1909. This is before he actually got in power. Ultimately, this is very important to understand. Ultimately, according to Marxists, the social root of religion is kept in the heart of man. And so naturally, to get rid of the social roots of religion, people need to be eliminated because that's the repository of the roots of religion. Or if we would say it in Christian terms, we are the temple of the Holy Spirit. Jesus Christ is inside us. The only way they can try to get rid of that is to eliminate the person. And this is what led to 100 plus million deaths in the last century alone because of socialism. This is why socialism is so dangerous, because it is predicated, very clearly predicated, on evil. And its purpose is the persecution of Christianity. And Vladimir Lenin said as much. Now, I want to read this quote from Brother Yun. So here's where this really gets, I think, hits home for us here in America. All right. My translator told me, Brother Yun, these people don't want to know the truth. That's why they're not calling you or wanting to meet you. In China, Christians are persecuted with beatings and imprisonment. In the West, Christians are persecuted by the words of other Christians. And so this persecution from other so-called Christians, according to Brother Yun, was the worst form. And clearly a worse form for him. I mean, a lot of these guys went to prison in China. Horrible conditions. And that physical imprisonment and torture that they suffered for the cause of Jesus Christ and the name of Christ. So a couple things, couple thoughts. First, pray for all those folks overseas. If you are in a church, ask your church to pick a day that you're praying specifically as a whole church for all the persecuted Christians around the world. Number two, join us tomorrow night at Covenant Church, and I'll get the address here in a second, at Covenant Church for a night regarding the persecuted Christians around the world. We're going to be showing a movie, and we're going to be doing some other things and giving you some information on what is actually happening. Number three, stand up in your community, because this persecution is happening here in America today, and educate people on the fact that up until right now, there are Christians being martyred around the world for the name of Jesus Christ. All right. That brings us now to your daily intelligence briefing. On the international fronts, a lot of stuff happening out of Israel. Some video in Iran of so-called rioters being shot. An Iranian guard general saying, quote, 21 U.S. bases in our sights, Haifa and Tel Aviv as well, end quote. This is all coming to us from Debka file. Then also Trump and Netanyahu confirm the U.S. and Israeli militaries are in coordination against a threatened Iranian attack. More information has also come out that it looks like that attack in Saudi Arabia was or had some of Iran's fingerprints on it. And then lastly, Netanyahu and Gantz met, but they were not able to form any sort of a unity government, so it looks like it's going to be another election in Israel. However, it does still appear that the bill to annex the Jordan Valley continues through the Knesset, fast-tracking. So we're going to keep our eyes on that part of it, because Qumran is in the Jordan Valley annexation proposal. All right. Also on the international front, not seen a lot about it happening in the media, but unrest is still occurring down in South America. What does that mean to us in America? Well, they're trying out down in South America what many believe they're going to try to use next year in America. So in other words, they're testing tactics and strategies out down there for what they're going to use next year in America. Also on the international front, Financial Times publishes an article. This is, folks, this is unbelievable. I want you to pay attention to this, okay? Because 10 years ago, everybody said, oh, this is never going to happen. It's conspiracy theory, blah, 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 blah. And here it is, right in our faces in this time. But the Financial Times published an article advocating UN intervention in the United States of America in the next election to, quote, prevent unrest or civil war. Really? Now they're openly advocating that the United Nations intervene in America. But more than that, they want to, and they're proposing in this article that was published again in the Financial Times, they are advocating, if you can believe it, advocating for the rewriting of the United States Constitution, and not by representatives, but by some self-appointed, you know, group of really smart guys and gals, right? Because they know better than all of us. Although they probably haven't read the Constitution, you know, cover to cover. They're actually advocating this, folks. This is real. It's happening in our time. And on top of that, they're talking about the fact that that's what is needed to save our democracy. We don't live in a democracy. We live in a republic. And the fact that these guys that went to Harvard and Yale don't grasp this is one of the gigantic problems in America. They say that the problem is that, well, you know, we've got people that feel like they're underrepresented because the majority is voting away their rights. Wait a minute. In a republic, the majority can never vote away the rights of a minority. That's the whole point of having a republic. But it can happen. It can happen in a democracy, demos kratian, or people rule or mob rule, where 50.01% vote away the rights of everybody else. And so the very fact they don't understand what the system is the problem. And also that we need to somehow rewrite our Constitution. No, we don't. We just need to abide by it. And so what they're trying to say now is that anybody who wants to abide by the Constitution is trying to keep a system that's broken. No, it's broken because there are people that are trying to subvert it and not abide by it. That's what's broken, is this intentional subversion of our republic. They don't believe that we really live in rule of law if they're arguing this. But then, I mean, if you think about this, I mean, really think about it. The arguing of UN troops coming to America, you know, 10 years ago, again, would have been laughed at, right? But now it's being advocated in one of the most well-read publications in America. Read it for yourself. You can check it out. I don't, you know, why the other question here too is, why are they advocating civil war all the time? Well, why are they saying that civil war is going to happen and this is the only way to, why are they saying that? You know, do they intend to do something that would upset a lot of Americans or what, you know, what are they talking about? They don't even defining their terms really. But I can tell you what sedition is. Sedition is advocating a foreign power come into this country and advocating that our Constitution be written not by the people's elected representatives and then voted on by the people, but by some group, self-appointed nobility, apparently. That's sedition, folks. That is sedition. And there are members of Congress who are supporting these ideas of UN intervention. Ilhan Omar was one of them. And they took an oath. This is a direct violation of that oath. Direct violation. All right, now let's move to the national front. Antifa ramping up recruitment. There's this threat video out there saying that if people don't go against Trump, that they're going to be held accountable for that later. ISIS activating cells, not just in Europe, but apparently trying to do so in America. And if you haven't been following what's been going on in Europe, there have been multiple terrorist attacks in Europe, including in London. But there have been other ones, too. And there have been attempts, I believe, here in the United States. I don't think we're hearing the full story about some of that. But on top of that, the Council on American-Islamic Relations is saying that they want to have 30 more Islamists now in Congress, which would be enough, again, to elect leadership in Congress with a wide margin because they already claim 120-something supporters. Folks, this is getting real. We need to get off the couch. And people that are telling you your vote doesn't matter, they're lying to you intentionally so that you can stay in bondage. That's it. Period. Also on the national front, Christian persecution. I want to touch one more thing, and that's Nigeria. Now maybe potentially a new caliphate. The vice president is aware of the situation from the American side and really looking at the situation and how the United States can help there. It is becoming pretty untenable there. All right, also on the regional front, Liberty State. So Seattle now going after Tim Iman's $30 car tabs, which was voted in overwhelmingly and saying that it doesn't represent the values of downtown Seattle. So they're going to go to court to overturn the will of the rest of the state. I want you to hear that. Seattle thinks they can just control the rest of the state, and they're just admitting it wide open right now. In fact, to the point that the Seattle Times actually had an article advocating for the state of King. In other words, King County. Great. So now you agree that there should be a Liberty State on one side and King on the other. Awesome. Let's vote on it. And the reason they were saying this is because Tim Iman's $30 car tabs is interfering in their dreams of a mass transit system. Okay, a.k.a. boondoggle in the United States. Well, we shouldn't be doing this in this era. We know about boondoggles from other parts of the country. Shouldn't be doing it in Washington State. And yet this is where Seattle really wants to go. And so they went to court. Now, Tim Iman went and filed against the Attorney General today, alleging improper interference. And there's going to be more on that on the next Patriot Radio. But Tim Iman going after him. And also, Tim Iman apparently announced his run for governor. And heads began to explode because they spent $5 million in this last campaign basically to give Tim Iman name recognition, which is kind of funny if you think about it. All right. I want to talk about a couple other things, too. Regional front, also Amiland. And this actually is an article by Gun Owners of America talking about 19 states now have counties with Second Amendment sanctuaries in place. It looks like almost all of Alaska, half of Washington, all of Idaho, all of Wyoming, and several counties in Oregon in our area have sanctuary counties for the Second Amendment. In other words, they are not going to enforce attempts to remove or infringe on or impair the right to bear arms. Very interesting. Also very interesting on the regional front, the acting BLM chief. Now, this is William Perry Penley, used to be with Mountain States Legal, defending property rights. He's now the acting BLM chief, calling for a deference to local law enforcement in regards to what's happening in the Western United States. So keep your eyes on that. And lastly, on the local front, a couple of things. First, check out my Facebook page. There is a new grant to research a connection between military service and violent extremism. In other words, now they're going after our veterans just like Vladimir Lenin did. Also tomorrow night, Covenant Church, 3506 West Princeton, 3506 West Princeton. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock is going to be an informational night on persecuted Christians around the world and what you can do to get involved and what you can do to help out. And then lastly, if you get a chance, check out Wreaths Across America. We do this every year to help put wreaths in memory of those who have fought and served our country. And so I posted that up there too. You can check it out if you want to. Just a great, what a great expression to serve our veterans. And that is the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that's been praying for the show and praying for me and Victoria. I really do appreciate it. All the well wishes that have come out, especially this week, just been fantastic. Thank you for that. And if you get a chance, go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US, like the page, and share it with your friends and family. And remember also that you can go to Voce.com, help keep us on the air, and Patriot Radio is also on iTunes in Podbean. Now, I want to take a moment again and go back up to Persecuted Christians Night. Okay, if you have the opportunity, come to Covenant Church tomorrow, 3506 West Princeton, 7 o'clock tomorrow night. We're going to be having a movie there and a presentation on what is actually happening around the world in regards to Christianity and the real story, not the spin the media takes that, oh, Christians aren't persecuted. It doesn't really happen. Yeah, it does. It's happening actually quite frequently. And organizations, great organizations like Save the Persecuted Christians and Voice of the Martyrs have done a great job calling attention to that. We're going to kind of combine everything into one so that you get all the information that you need. I also want to mention, too, that tomorrow it is anticipated that the report that the Democrats instigated, as far as an investigation against yours truly, is going to be released tomorrow morning, at least briefed to the Republican leadership. So pay attention to social media tomorrow because this should be interesting. Now, the fact that they're treating state representatives like they're trying to treat our president shows you the time that we're in. They're upset that they're being called out. They're upset that they're being exposed for who they are. And they're going after our president. They're going after veterans. They're going after great patriots. And so don't be surprised that this kind of stuff is happening, but get informed and make sure that your friends and family are informed as well. All right. Very happy to introduce my guest today, James Simpson. He has a gigantic resume, but I'm just going to make it short. Investigative journalist, businessman, former economist and budget examiner for the White House Office of Management and Budget. Also the author of a couple books that I think you all out there in Patriot Radio Land would be very interested in. The first, The Red-Green Axis 2.0, An Existential Threat to America and the World. And also the Red-Green Axis, Refugees, Immigration, and the Agenda to really, I think I'll just kind of ad lib here a little bit, destroy America. I mean, that's really what this is about. Jim, thank you very much for joining me on the show today. And I'm really glad to have your expertise to talk about some of these issues and what's happening in America.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me. Great to be with you.
All right. Well, so... You know, I want to start with a couple of things, but the first is I haven't had any of the guests I've had on comment on what happened with Chick-fil-A. I was so disappointed when I saw that. If you could fill the listeners a little bit in on what you think happened and why it happened and what's going on behind the scenes.
Well, there's a number of things. You know, whenever a organization like Chick-fil-A or any of us, as you mentioned earlier, put up a stout resistance to whatever game they're playing or whatever agenda they're pushing, those people, those organizations get ruthlessly attacked. And when Chick-fil-A, you know, put up a stout resistance to the whole LGBTQ agenda and said, we are Christians and we believe in Christianity. I'm sorry, we can't support this, and we're going to continue doing what we're doing. Well, then, of course, the Southern Poverty Law Center labeled them a hate group simply because they are Christians and they believe they have a right to express their religion in what they do, how they live, and how they conduct business. And you know, there's nothing hateful about that, but of course the Southern Poverty Law Center uses a Leninist tactic that shames and discredits anybody who disagrees with them. And it is directly a Leninist tactic. Lenin said, we must write in a language which sows hate, revulsion, and scorn towards those who disagree with us. And they pushed that agenda. I have a whole presentation that I give about how that agenda finally got mainlined into the Southern Poverty Law Center through a communist that the founder of the Southern Poverty Law Center, Julian Bond, worked with for years. And so it's a tactic of hatred, it's a tactic of defamation, and it's a tactic that is guided and intended to destroy any and all enemy of communism, enemy of socialism, enemy of all their radical agendas. And so that's what happened. And as you know, I'm sure, Southern the Floyd Corkins, who was a homosexual activist, attacked the Family Research Council's headquarters in Washington, D.C., and he bought a whole slew of Chick-fil-A sandwiches and went to their offices with a handgun and 50 rounds of ammunition, intending, in his own words, to kill as many of them as he could and smear their faces with Chick-fil-A sandwiches. And fortunately, he was stopped by the black guard, who the guy who was at the door downstairs, who was wounded in the process, but successfully restrained Floyd Corkins until the police came and they arrested him. And he admitted that he had been inspired by the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate watch list to attack the Southern Poverty, to attack Family Research Council. Similarly, the congressional baseball shooter was also inspired by the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate list. So Chick-fil-A was a major target for these people, to the point where they wouldn't have minded if the whole organization had been wiped out by Floyd Corkins. They don't do it themselves, but they inspire enough hatred in other people who are sick, deranged, and let them do the work for them. So it's really a very malevolent strategy. But Chick-fil-A resisted for a long time, and then they put some leftists into the leadership roles in their foundation, and those leftists began donating to, well, they donated to the Southern Poverty Law Center in 2017. They donated to many, pro-LGBT organizations, to Planned Parenthood supporting organizations. And so they were subverted from the inside. Now, I don't think that takes them off the hook. I think they probably brought those people on for strategic purposes, because they believed it would help them and in their business to stop or at least lessen the assault that the left had been engaging in against them, which they probably saw as hurting their business. And so that's really what it's all about. And it remains to be seen if they dial some of that back. They said they were going to, but I don't think they will, at least, or they haven't yet. So people should know that, you know, Chick-fil-A folded. And, you know, if you're a Christian and you believe in what we believe, if you believe in Christian values, you don't fold in the face of the enemy.
You should never fold, especially in the face of this enemy. And I want to get to that part of it, too. The red-green axis, the Islamists and the Marxists, they really have been coordinated. I think the most visible representation of that is the Squad. But yeah. I'm gonna start with you, with your first book. And that is the erasing of America, this idea that ultimately the red-green axis wants to erase America through immigration and some other things. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, well, it's a strategy they have pursued for a long time, and the idea is to swamp, basically overwhelm our society with people from all over the third world. And they want people from the third world because they're needy, because they speak hundreds of different languages. So they will overwhelm our welfare system. They will not assimilate, at least successfully in many cases, and with very much difficulty in all cases. And the idea is to literally fill our communities with so many people from other places that Americans who understand our founding principles, who believe in our society, believe in the superiority of our system of government, which has provided, you know, untold wealth for the last 200 years, the freest society ever. Those people will just become diluted to the point where they're irrelevant. And, you know, they say this stuff, and they say it in the sense that, yes, well, we have to get rid of all these white supremacists, and that's what we're doing, because the United States is a white supremacist, white nationalist, bigoted, racist, homophobic, et cetera, nation. And so they rationalize it by saying, well, we just bring in people that don't look like us, people that don't behave like us, people that don't think like us, people that don't talk like us. And after a while, we won't even be recognized in the society. We will just be, you know, people among millions of different kinds of people, and it will no longer be a constitutional republic. It'll just die by default. And that's the agenda, and it brings in so many different problems. For example, in my 2.0 book, the first one of my favorite tables, the first one you come to, it lists cities throughout the United States, school districts, and the number of languages spoken in public schools in those districts. And it's anywhere from 25 to 125 different languages spoken by anywhere from 10 to 30% of the student body. Now, I ask you, I don't even have to ask you, how do teachers effectively teach the things that people need to learn when they're confronted with hundreds of different languages? In many cases, some of the languages aren't even recognizable. They have no interpreters. They have nobody who can teach them English because they're unknown dialects. How do you teach students effectively in that atmosphere? And the answer is you don't. You can't. And this isn't just in a few locales. That table that I have is about, I don't have my book in front of me, but it's about 20 different cities all across the country. But it's a subset of those that I looked at, and I took the figures right out of the school boards. So you can't deny the fact there's over 400 languages spoken in public school today in the United States. And this is a deliberate strategy created by the left to gradually subvert our entire society.
Well, the Communist Manifesto, Chapter 2, Karl Marx was very clear when he said he wanted to abolish nations. He wanted to abolish nationality and countries.
Yeah.
And that's really what they've been working at for 100 years.
Oh, absolutely right. 100 years. That's right. And it actually goes back further than that, really.
It goes
back into the mid-1800s. But yes. Aggressively since the turn of the century, really, and then even more after the first communist state, the Soviet Union, was created, because then they had the power of a state behind them, they had the finances behind them, and they had all of the other subversive tactics that a state can bring to bear. So, yeah, it's been going on for a long, long time.
Let's talk about your latest book. Why is the Red-Green Axis an existential threat, or how is it an existential threat in your view? And then also, what do you think the Marxists and the Islamists have planned for next year? I think next year is going to be a historic year in many ways, and some negative, some positive. But what can we expect, and why and how is this an existential threat?
Well, we can expect more of what we've already seen. We know, for example, the Red-Green Axis poster children, the squad, Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib in particular, notice that these women claim to be devout Muslims, but they are radical leftists at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it would seem to be, incongruent. How can that happen when you have, you understand what Muslims believe, so much of what the left believes? Well, first of all, they don't believe in God. They don't believe in any kind of deity. And then they believe in all of these things that would get you killed in a Muslim country. So you have to ask yourself, really, what's going on? Well, the fact of the matter is that the Islamic organizations in this country, which are primarily represented by the Muslim Brotherhood in hundreds of different organizations that are all Muslim Brotherhood, intend to subvert our nation by what they call civilization jihad. And that is doing exactly what the immigration agenda is. And in fact, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed said that the brothers would infiltrate into America using its rights and its laws, and then they would go on the attack until the American people became so tired and so fed up that they would expose their necks for the slaughter. Now, that's what he said, and they're doing that very thing, although the terrorist attacks have not been yet what they are like in Europe, but I believe that kind of thing is coming. The Council on American Islamic Relations, for example, is the foremost public face of the Muslim Brotherhood in America. And they do everything they can to disrupt and resist law enforcement efforts all across the country. Most recently, they were able to get a court to agree with them that the terrorist watch list is unconstitutional. So guess what? The terrorist watch list has now been neutered. And that's because of the Council on American Islamic Relations. And, this is not, I'm not talking about Muslims here. I'm talking about these very, very malevolent organizations that I think most Muslims would much rather do without. We live in a great, free, open society where people are attracted here because they can raise a family, they can enjoy an affluence unavailable elsewhere and a freedom unavailable elsewhere. They don't want to be involved in all that stuff, but they don't really have a choice, because if their imams tell them, you know, that they've got to get with the agenda, they're really not free to do anything else without risking being excommunicated from, you know, their communities. So it's a very malevolent agenda, and the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations, another Muslim Brotherhood front, has been aggressively grooming Muslims to run for public office. And there wouldn't be anything wrong with that either. But they're all radical leftists. They're all in bed with the radical left. And what is the advantage to that? The advantage is that by aligning themselves with the radical left, they enjoy the commanding heights of popular culture. You know, they enjoy influence in Hollywood. We know they enjoy lots of influence in the media. They enjoy increasing interest in our political infrastructure. They are beginning to insert Islamic concepts into public schools. So, and this is all being facilitated by the left. And the left, for its part, sees the Muslims as the perfect vehicle to wreak havoc in America, to chop down the tenets of our Constitution under the protection of the First Amendment. And so this is a very unholy alliance, and that's the reason they're allied, because they both see the advantage of working together to destroy our nation.
I think what I really want to focus on now is, you know, what do they have planned for next year? Because it seems like things are kind of ramping up. What are you hearing, and what do you predict?
Well, I forget exactly. I think there's something like, there's a lot of Muslims running for public office, so we're going to get a lot of that. We've already seen increasingly aggressive efforts on the part of Muslim Brotherhood groups to silence us, and I have faced some of that firsthand. You know, we've been shut down from various speaking engagements. A friend of mine who normally puts on events all over the country had four of them shut down by Antifa, which threatened the various venues to the point where they felt it wasn't safe to have the events go forward. And we're going to see a further ramping up of their efforts to silence us, to shut us down, to declare anybody, as they did with Chick-fil-A, anybody who disagrees with their agenda is a racist, a bigot, a hater, an Islamophobe, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they've been very successful at that. The Trump administration, I think, hopefully unknowingly, invited a number of these people to talk with them about, interfaith dialogue and Muslim groups working with Christian groups, et cetera, to bridge the differences between these groups. But the Muslims see those bridges as a one-way bridge to bring people over to their side. It's not two ways, and it's very subversive. So, unfortunately, the Trump administration, for all its good points, has been, once again, I think, misguided by whoever organized those events. And as we know, there are a lot of people both in the Trump administration and many more in the bureaucracy that are working against the best interests of this country and against the agendas that Trump might otherwise be pursuing. So we're going to see all that stuff ramp up. I don't know what we're going to see in the election other than more of the same. And I think if as we move closer to the election, well, I know we're already seeing this and we're going to see a lot. They are working around the clock to register people to vote. And they are working around the clock to insert laws and regulations that dilute our ability to detect and prevent vote fraud, because I'm sure you know that vote fraud is a Democrats rely on vote fraud to win. They rely on it, and they're changing laws. You know, we have the law in California, the vote harvesting, which is just flat out vote fraud. Under the governor's signature, you know, I mean, it's incredible. And there's a lot of that stuff going on. It's very scary. I also think we're going to see increasingly aggressive efforts from the media to shut us down. It's very hard for us to get the truth across to the American people, and they have made it increasingly harder. You know, Facebook and Twitter deplatforming people. Even I'm sure you read how they deleted YouTube, just deleted dozens of Trump ad campaign video ads, YouTube video ads.
Right, and people deplatform from Twitter for no reason. It's happening to a lot of people I know, actually.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. It really, and it's frightening. And it's frightening that, I mean, the media has been leftist since, I think, the 30s. You know, the New York Times did things that were that damaged our national security in World War II, for crying out loud. And even more into the 50s and during the Vietnam War. And it has only gotten worse and worse, and it's to the point where they now just flat out won't report anything other than what they want people to see, hear, and read. I was in Michigan in September, and we were going to speak at a big venue, a church in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. And a couple of left-wing representatives got word of this, and so they started protesting. And then that got out in the media, and they had to shut down the event because they were afraid, once again, of Antifa protesters and people like that actually physically threatening the church. Mm-hmm. And so and this was all written up extremely biased, one-sided, in USA Today and in the Detroit Free Press, which is a subsidiary of USA Today. And I wrote them a rebuttal, an op-ed rebuttal to their very blatantly biased news articles, they call them. And they didn't even respond with a no. They just wouldn't even consider.
Right.
And that's shocking stuff. You know, I mean, it used to be where even if they disagreed, they would let you put up at least an opinion column that put your position in the public sphere. But they won't do that anymore.
That's a Leninist doctrine in and of itself to silence quite literally the majority. We got about a minute left. Jim, if you could, if people want to buy your books and they want to find out more about you, where can they go on the web?
Well, a lot of my archives, I don't really have a website because I usually write for a lot of other folks. But a lot of my archives are at crisisnow.net, crisisnow.net. And, of course, they can go to Amazon and get my books. Just search under James Simpson. Or they can go to the Center for Security Policy. That's securefreedom.org. And search under my name, and I have a bunch of articles there, And they can also actually get free PDF downloads of both of those books.
Perfect. Jim Simpson, thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Really appreciate everything you're doing. I'd love to have you back on again as we kind of get into next year and as the marks just begin to ramp up.
Would love to. Thanks for having me so much.
All right. Blessings. Jim Simpson, author, and his two books, go check them out, The Red-Green Axis 2.0, An Existential Threat to America, and The Red-Green Axis, Refugees, Immigration, and the Agenda to Erase America. That's part and parcel what they're trying to do. They're trying to erase our culture, tradition, and heritage. So if you get the opportunity, check Jim Simpson out. You can also go to Center for Security Policy. He's got some articles on there in Crisis Now, where his main archive apparently is as well. So again, this is a guy that has been at the highest levels. I mean, he's an investigative journalist, but he's been at the highest levels as an economist and budget examiner for the White House Office of Management and Budgets under President Reagan, H.W. Bush, and Clinton. So, I mean, this isn't somebody that doesn't know what's going on. So check him out online. Got some breaking news for you, some good news to share. We've been talking about Christian persecution at the beginning of the show. Going to be talking about it again tomorrow night at Covenant Church, 3506 West Princeton in Spokane. And 7 o'clock, we're going to be showing a movie and a couple of other small movies as well, talking about and detailing Christian persecution around the world. But here in Spokane, Pastor Afshin Yagtun, who was arrested for preaching at one of those transvestite, transsexual story hours, his case was dismissed today, all charges dropped. A good news story. May God bless all of you. Thank you for listening today, and may he make this generation the greatest one.